Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Paddock Project. We have a big weekend to recap. A lot happened at Monza. It was very exciting. And
Mamma mia.
Mamma mia. No, that's not how he said it. He goes, Mamma mia. Mamma mia. And it was actually so cool listening to his radio because I could like understand it in Italian and I was trying to translate it, but a lot of it was muffled. But regardless, we do have a lot to talk about. So we'll jump right in. I'm Chessa.
I'm Tiggy.
And I'm Sarah. Wow. I feel like this was one of those weekends that had such a massive switch from Saturday to Sunday. It was a McLaren 1-2, looking like we were set for another McLaren runaway victory. And then we ended up with Charles' second win since Monaco. And this was a stat that I found kind of shocking. It's only his seventh win ever.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Fewer wins than I thought. And two of those now are at Monza, and just in such kind of a tough season for him, with not only having to deal with Red Bull as always, but now needing to see this resurgent McLaren even potentially overtaking Red Bull, and just feeling like once again Ferrari has not put it together. I was so happy for him to just have this kind of weekend, have Ferrari strategy work out extremely well, Ferrari tire degradation work out extremely well, things we don't usually say. I think besides that, my main takeaway is I think constructors is absolutely wide open. It's now 446 to 438. That's potentially
crazy. That's one race.
That can change in Baku. Yeah, that could change hands in Baku. But I feel very strongly that drivers will still be max. It's still a gap of 60 points. This weekend was just okay. We can debate.
Yeah, but we'll debate this. I'm also on the other side of that coin, I think.
This weekend, I feel like, is just an example of McLaren not being able to put it together when it counts. And just mathematically, they need to be hitting every single opportunity they have. And they did not convert a 1-2 into a win. So even for all of Red Bull's struggles right now, and I do think Red Bull has examples like after Singapore of last year of really struggling with the car and being able to turn it around quickly, I think Max will continue to be a podium factor. And I think we can also debate this. The Simply Lovely was far too soon, Lando. I'm sorry.
That I'll give you, Sarah. That I'll give you.
Sarah will not let go of the Simply Lovely.
I won't let this go. I won't.
Sarah, I also love what you said about Charles and this being a hard season for him. It's also a hard season for him because I think he has a lot to prove and get done this season before Lewis becomes his teammate.
So true. So
I think there's a lot to think about there. I think for me, this was good, clean racing. It was a good weekend. We haven't had a safety car in 7 races, which is actually why we haven't had one since Montreal, which I think is 7 races. And I think because of that, we're getting to see pure strategy, which is super fun. Obviously, safety cars and weather and things like that play into strategy. But this race to me was so, so fun and so easy to watch when you're thinking about when are they coming in for a pit stop? What tires are they going to get? Who's going to get the undercut? Things like that. So that was really, really fun for me to watch. And yeah, I do think I was very surprised and very happy that the Ferrari strategy paid off. And we'll get to this, but my hot take was almost – I'm going to give myself a 95% on this one.
so close. And unfortunately, Carlos's birthday weekend, it couldn't pay off for him for the final podium spot. But yeah, you guys covered a lot of it. I think this was an incredible weekend, and it just goes to show how much excitement there is in F1 right now. I mean, we literally lost a driver this week, gained a rookie, had a new rookie signed in Kimi Antonelli after him crashing out of FP1. Like all of
that, we didn't even mention that
this weekend, which is insane. And we do have to, I think, give our hats off to Colapinto for his debut weekend, which driving the way he did, coming P12, making up many places during the race, and just keeping it clean on a hard track that's really fast, super impressive. So I think you guys covered a lot of it. I'm excited to debate the McLaren versus Red Bull. I'm excited to debate the papaya rules. There's so much to talk about. So yeah, I'll leave it at that for now. But jumping into MVP and LVP, I think for me, I have to give it to Charles's tire strategy. Yeah. And so I guess I'm giving this to Ferrari, but Charles obviously drove an incredible race to win, but I don't think they would have won, obviously, without that one stopper. But I have to give credit to Discord for this one. But they were saying that Bottas really deserves the credit for being the first on the hard tires and going over 30 laps on those. And then Ferrari noticing that, most likely, and being like, okay, I think we can make this work because Bottas has done it. And that's then fair. McLaren not really noticing it. So I'm going to give my rogue
thank you for
MVP
your service, Bottas. Get Bottas. This guy a seat.
Thank yes. you for your service, yeah. Discord, as always.
And Discord.
All of our Discord fans.
Firing.
Yeah.
For me, I think Piastri. That lap one was unbelievable. And we, again, we'll talk about papaya rules and elbows out and everything, but he is showing weekend after weekend after weekend that he is such a top caliber driver in only his second season on the grid. That's the type of move we would have expected from, I feel like, Max or Lewis in 2021. It was bold. It was risky. It was on his own teammate. It was future world champion type energy from him. I love that. He also was still managing to keep Lando behind him the rest of the race. He prevented Lando from breaking his statistic of never leading at the end of lap one after starting Oof. A pole. We have a lot to discuss, so much, but Oscar. And then agreed with Colapinto. He started P18, finished P12, and he pulled off a one-stop strategy, which is so hard to do for rookies that tend to really struggle with tire management, tire degradation. He did amazing, and this was a crazy fact. He said, before today, I had never driven more than 8 laps in a row in this car.
Whoa.
So good, unbelievable performance from him.
Yeah, honestly, I think the teams that did really well, like we talked about a lot of things that we really liked. I think I'm going to go with Williams as sort of like my sleeper MVP. Albon and Colapinto both pulled off one-stop strategies. Colapinto went 36 laps on his stint, which is only one less than Charles's stint. So it was really, really incredible. They did well. Albon was able to pick up points for the team too. So I was really happy to see that. And then the car was doing really well, but they tend to always do well in these high-speed circuits. Okay, for LVP, I'm going to give it to V-Carb. Just absolutely, they weren't even within like spitting distance of doing anything exciting in my mind. And it's crazy because we really did think of them as a solid midfield team earlier and a few seasons ago. They've really dropped off. This was a horrible weekend for Yuki. We'll talk about some of the stats. And yeah, Danny is just continually not putting his stake in the ground for whether or not he deserves a seat for next year at all. So big LVP.
Yeah, Yuki's tweet was, his caption was, Monza, one day you'll love me back.
Just, oh my God, wait, I can't wait till we talk about the stat. It's crazy.
So sad. For me, I appreciate the Williams MVP, but I feel like I have to give my LVP to James Vowles, who I love. But why is Mick Schumacher out here catching strays from James
Justice
Vowles?
Justice for Mick. Thank you.
Can you explain that for everyone?
Yes, James Vowles said, quote, Mick Schumacher is not special, basically why they did not sign Mick over Colapinto. Like, there's so many ways that you could say, frame it as a positive. Like, Colapinto, we want to develop this young rookie driver who we think may have an F1 seat one day, or anything. But yeah, why
he's given so much to the Development Academy. We want to reward our drivers in the program.
And yes, James Vowles did apologize and walk it back, but I do feel horrible for Mick that it came out that way. And I think Toto was not pleased with it, which James Vowles is part of the Toto Wolff Mercedes Academy. So that definitely says something that Toto's not, wasn't happy with that. But yeah, I just think also the way
Toto's statement on it was pretty strong.
Yeah. The way that they handled the Logan dropping this week too, which is crazy that it was only this past week, but I just feel like it could have been better handled. And I don't want to put it all on James Vowles, but at the end of the day, the buck stops with him. And I have really liked him in the past, and I'm sure I still do, but I just thought that these two things this week were not it.
Yeah.
For me, I gotta go with Lando. I don't know if this is an unpopular LVP, but they clearly have an absolute rocket ship of a car. And for what is it, the 6th, 7th, 8th time, I forget what time it is, he is not able to have the lead at the end of lap one after getting pole, after being passed by his own teammate, which in Lando's defense, maybe he wasn't expecting. It was a huge move from Oscar, but still letting that happen, letting Charles pass him immediately after, it again is not the type of driving that needs to be happening if you're trying to launch a long shot campaign for the Drivers' Championship. And it was also not the type of driving that follows a Simply Lovely after only your second win. I know I'm still not over this, but it just feels like it reminded me of Charles winning today when he was just so gracious, so happy for the fans, so nice. And it just made me think of all the other top drivers that have won this year. Carlos, Charles, Lewis, George. I can't imagine any of them winning at Zandvoort and saying that.
I think that's fair. That's very fair.
And I even can't imagine Max winning at Monza and saying grazie mille or something. It just – it really felt just so targeted. And I think also what was interesting to me was Daniel Ricciardo came out pretty strong saying, I know Max well and Max will take that as – I know they're friends, but Max will take that as fighting words. So there, I've said my piece.
Well, I hope they continue to fight for the rest of the season. Okay, really quick before we jump into the weekend, let's talk about our hot takes and how they held up. Tiggy?
I will keep mine quick so I can cede the floor to you. I'm sensing the gloating from the other side of this camera. I said a Checo podium, which was very hot and very wishful thinking and very wrong.
Tiggy has written next to this, LMAO.
Yikes.
I had both Ferraris on podium and a Ferrari win. So it's basically two weekends in a row of me being spot on. So, well, almost spot on.
Almost spot on, yeah. But very good, very good.
I think we'll give that to you. That's a pretty crazy one.
Thank you.
For practice, for FP1, the really big news here was Kimi crashing out on his debut in Russell's car only 10 minutes into the session. It was
Russell's
absolutely
face on the video. On the,
I was like, help.
Oh, my God.
I'm starting to sweat.
On such a big weekend, Tiggy had been so right about this, about Monza being kind of the big announcement weekend with Kimi being Italian and everything. And it was a wild way to start the weekend. FP1 for the main news of it. We had Max out front, followed by Charles and Lando. And then for FP2, it was really tight. The top five cars were all within a tenth and a half of each other. Lewis came out on top with Lando and Sainz in P2 and P3.
And to round it out for FP3, it was a big Mercedes session here. Lewis had the fastest time, followed by George and then Leclerc. This was also the day that they announced Kimi for 2025. And I think when we did a poll when Kimi crashed, we were like, uh-oh, is this too soon? Or is just kind of like first debut jitters? And a lot of people just said it's first debut jitters. It's fine. And then subsequently he got signed. So the people
he was spoken. Also pulling out a crazy lap time, yeah. Which I think the crash probably just exhibited a lot of inexperience, but he seems to have the raw talent. And when you think about Max and all of these greats who started off when they were younger, they were throwing the car into the wall all the time because they were just testing 100%. The limits.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Of the car. Not saying that Kimi is Max Verstappen, but I do see why Toto feels that there's a lot of promise there. Someone also messaged us asking if we thought that the announcement was coming all along on Saturday, regardless of whether he did well or not in FP1 on Friday, or if it was kind of like damage control. My personal opinion is that this was coming all along.
I agree.
And that regardless of how he did in FP1, they would have announced it just given his home weekend and they had his mind made up. I mean, Toto's quote was like 5 minutes after Lewis told me he's leaving. I knew it
was me. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that for sure. But jumping into quali. So Q1, we had a scary moment here when Max was coming out of the pits where he almost collided with Oscar, who had an unsafe release while being let out of the pits. A lot of cars with moments in the gravel, which makes this a pretty unforgiving track. We had the yellow flags thrown for Magnussen, but in the end out, we had Yuki, Stroll, Colapinto, Bottas, and Joe. So no crazy surprises.
For Q2, Q2 was slightly delayed to clean the gravel off the track, again, since there were so many gravel incidents. And when things got going, both Mercedes looked really fast. Hamilton had the fastest lap there for a bit, but by a very tight margin. And for cuts, we had Alonso, Ricciardo, K-Mag, Gasly, and Ocon. So notably, Albon was into Q3, and also Hülkenberg was into Q3 for the seventh race this season. He has just been unbelievably in quali.
Good for him. For Q3, we saw the Red Bulls really struggling. Max had a big snap on his flying lap. Checo ran wide on his. They were only able to get P7 and P8. And Max said it was, quote, shocking. So he was like seemed very disturbed at what had happened. Overall, for the top six, it was a super tight session. All the cars on the, in the top six covered less than 0.2. And in the end, like we've been saying, we had a McLaren front row with Lando, then Oscar. And then we had Russell, Leclerc, Sainz, Hamilton, then Max and Checo, followed up by Albon and Hülkenberg.
Yeah, this was an interesting quali. Hamilton was so mad at himself.
Oh, my gosh.
He was basically like, I could have been on pole. This quali has been such a weakness of mine. Need to figure it out, but there's no one to blame but me, sort of thing, which was kind of wild. But for the race, so Sunday, we had a very hot and sunny day at the track. Track temperatures were above 30 degrees Celsius, 86 degrees Fahrenheit. In terms of strategy, there was a 40% chance of rain that was being factored in. And of course, pit stop strategy played a huge role here. Pirelli had suggested that a one stop would be quickest, but this track does have high levels of tire deg, which might have made a two stopper the better option. Obviously, we saw what happened, but at the beginning, both were on the table for sure.
For the start of the race, though, everyone started on mediums, except for a few drivers, notably Max and Checo, who were on hards. So it seemed like probably everyone was going to try to go, maybe go for the one stop, but it wasn't sure. But with Max and Checo starting on hards, it seemed like they were going to try to go for that one stop. So on the start itself, Lando did really well off the line, which we didn't see last time he was in pole. Something that he's definitely struggled with in the past. And then he was out front, and then George had a big lockup in P3, causing him to go off the track onto that escape road. And he was literally weaving between the bollards. It was so crazy to see, and he must have had such a fast reaction time to be able to weave through those and then rejoin the track. He lost track position. He rejoined at P7 and then also got a decent amount of front wing damage. I think the biggest thing at the start that was so exciting was heading into that second chicane on that first lap, Oscar pulled that move on Lando. It was just stunning. He went round the outside and then just literally grabbed the win from Lando. And then Lando kind of faltered a little bit and let Charles squeeze in, and Charles ended up P2, and then Lando was in P3.
We also had a bit of a tussle on lap one between Danny and Hülkenberg. So Danny squeezed Hülkenberg. He ended up getting a 5-second time penalty. And then shortly after that, Yuki and Hülkenberg also had some impact. Hülkenberg had to pit on lap six to repair some damage and got a 10-second time penalty for that incident. And Yuki ended up DNFing. This was really unfortunate, especially like we were saying with how well Hülkenberg has been doing in quali. And then for George, the team managed to hold him out until lap 12 to pit for repairs, trying to keep him within the window for a one-stopper and put him on hards. But he also did end up needing to pit for repairs.
It was amazing to me that he lasted out that long, because the left side or the right side of his wing was literally on the ground, which is crazy.
Checo was riding in. He's like, what is this? This is dangerous. He needs to go in. I'm surprised they didn't throw that flag.
Yeah, same. So for the rest of the race, we didn't actually see too much wheel-to-wheel action at the front of the grid, except for some good battles between George and Checo, but it really came down to tire strategy and pit stop timing. So most teams were really trying to go for the one-stopper, with drivers pitting starting on around lap 15 for hards. We saw Lando pit on lap 15 for hards in order to successfully undercut Charles, which we thought was a good move. And then Oscar followed on lap 16. But given the amount of tire wear they ended up having, this might have been the wrong call, with them pitting too early to pull off a one-stopper. So in the end, they had to pit on lap 33 and 39 for new tires. But on the other hand, we had Ferrari, which seemed like a risky decision to hold off to do the one-stopper, but it ended up working beautifully for Charles, who was out front, better able to manage his tires. And since Sainz had to fight a bit more to hold on against the McLarens, his tires weren't able to last long enough to keep P2. But overall, this strategy paid off. And if Sainz had been able to hold on just a little bit longer, it definitely could have been a double podium for the Tifosi. So Chessa, you were so close.
I was so excited. And I had to pause the race a little bit at the beginning. So when I was watching it at the end, I was like a few laps behind. And I was like, it's going to happen. And then when I finally caught up, I was like, darn.
I think that's when you messaged us. And I was like, isn't Sainz fourth?
I had to pause to get coffee, please. So in terms of the strategy for the Red Bulls, they actually held off the longest because they started on hards and were running 1-2 at one point. They both pit around lap 24 or 25 for another set of hards each. And if they had been able to hold on and make a one-stop work, that could have been a very different race. It was very exciting. But then they both went in for a second stop towards the end of the race. So saw a lot of interesting strategy playing out. We'll talk about it when we go team by team, but our finishing 10 was Leclerc in P1, Piastri, Lando, Sainz, Hamilton, Verstappen, then Russell, Checo, Albon, and K-Mag. And of course, our radio of the week comes from Charles himself. Mamma mia, a nostra casa, which means in our house. So it was beautiful.
Such a good radio. Before we jump into team by team, we thought we would do standings first for a change since it's getting so close in constructors. It helps to situate us a little bit here. So for drivers first, we have Max with 303 and Lando with 241. So it's about a 60-point gap there. And then Charles is not far behind Lando. He has 217. And then we have Oscar with 197, Sainz with 184, Lewis with 164, Checo with 143, and George with 128. And then for constructors, this is where things are really exciting. We have Red Bull with 446. McLaren has 438. They are so close. Ferrari also is kind of in the conversation now with a 407. Then we have a big drop off to Mercedes. Mercedes has 292 and Aston Martin has 74.
Mercedes is sitting pretty in P4. Wow.
They're kind of the no man's land at the moment, but
yeah.
We'll see how they do. Only 8 races left, so I don't think they'll be knocking on the door for P3, especially if Ferrari can continue at least part of what they did this weekend. But yeah, the top three, all in conversation for sure.
Okay, friends, today we're talking about sleep and specifically getting better sleep. If you can relate to having trouble falling asleep and staying asleep and getting good quality sleep, then listen up. We are so excited to share a new product we've been using from Beam, their Dream Powder. Our listeners will get a special discount on this Dream Powder. It's a science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. It tastes insane. I did it last night and I woke up this Monday morning feeling incredibly refreshed. I gave it to my little sister and she loved it too. They also have amazing flavors, sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, and then of course the original flavor, cinnamon cocoa. It's been tested for high quality efficacy and formulated to ease your body into rest, supporting all 4 stages of the sleep cycle to help you stay asleep longer and fall asleep faster. Other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. If you want to try the best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/paddockproject and use code paddockproject at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/paddockproject and use code paddockproject for up to 40% off. We have been very busy lately and have been really trying to do everything we can to feel our best as we wind up the summer and head into a very busy fall. And one thing we've been doing to help us and support us is using our Happy Mammoth products, especially Estrogen Control. It helps to support our hormones and alleviate any of those pesky PMS symptoms, including bloating. And it also assists in maintaining cognitive health and promoting liver function and digestive health. Happy Mammoth also has the amazing Hormone Harmony supplement dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women, and they make no compromise when it comes to quality. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Like most people, we love a great deal, but what we don't love is jumping through a million hoops just to end up saving a few dollars, especially when it comes to wireless plans. There's so many promos and offers out there, but they do really make it hard to get good quality savings. With Mint Mobile, it really is so easy though. For just $15 a month, you can get a wireless plan when you get a 3-month plan. And the website and activation process are so seamless. Honestly, the longest part of this process is going to be the time that you spend on hold trying to break up with your old provider. To get started, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. There you can see that right now all 3-month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your old phone number along with all of your existing contacts. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. That's mintmobile.com mintmobile.com/F1AreTheGirls. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/F1AreTheGirls. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning F1 championships is sometimes also what you need to keep your car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, diving into teams, Red Bull. This weekend was a large step back for them, especially when it comes to maintaining constructors' lead, as we just talked about. They got lucky that Ferrari took the win instead of McLaren, but the gap is now only 8 points. And with a P6 and P8 finish for Max and Checo, the team and the drivers seem to be a bit kind of stunned or speechless as to where exactly they lost their edge. A lot of the PR with Christian Horner and Max is sort of giving Mercedes, honestly, for the past several seasons of like we just don't know what's going on. We can't figure it out. The balance is off, like unclear. So both drivers struggled for pace all weekend, couldn't seem to get a handle on the car. They had some slower than usual pit stops, which didn't help. And I think looking at their current trajectory, it seems reasonable that they will come out of the Baku-Singapore doubleheader in P2 and potentially, this feels crazy to say, but even fighting with Ferrari for P3.
So. Could you imagine? And the pit stop point is so interesting too. Max had a 6.2 second stop at one point, and we've talked so much about how Red Bull pulls off these flawless weekends, even when circumstances aren't perfect, where Max's incredible strategy is perfect. The pit stops are 2 seconds. And this felt like a weekend where everything went wrong, down to strategy, down to pit stops. It was tough. And I totally agree that it was kind of like Mercedes, instead of having a really specific statement like, oh, our upgrade package didn't work, or oh, we've pinpointed the car is too heavy, whatever it is. Instead, exactly what Toto has been saying for years of, we don't understand why this is happening.
And what's even crazier is that obviously when it was happening to Mercedes, Lewis and George were frustrated and you know, you could see that. But Max and Checo were literally mind-boggled. They're so frustrated and their radios show it. And so it's like, I don't even know what we're watching. I don't even know what to call it. Like, give it three more races and then I'll have a better answer.
I have to say I appreciated Checo's honest comment at one point. I think it was this week or last week, saying that Max can compensate for the car with his talent much more than I can, which is such a transparent way to put it, I think, and is probably true. I mean, this is showcasing Max didn't finish great this race, but it's showcasing that Max, I think, has probably been struggling a lot with the car, but has been able to handle it a bit better just because of his sheer level of talent. But I thought that was kind of crazy to hear coming straight from Checo's mouth.
Yes. The only other thing to talk about for Red Bull is that we definitely have a constructors battle on our hand. There's no doubt about that. But I think we might also have a true drivers championship battle take shape between Max and Lando if like you said, McLaren can actually pull off they have to do basically every weekend completely flawless. And also we see Max not getting podiums. So.
Yeah, it feels like a tall order. I will definitely give you that. Like, I think it's more likely than not that Max will continue to keep his edge, but it feels much more possible that there could be a fight at least down to the last couple races, and different than the past few seasons that we've had.
Okay, if you all had to put a percentage on it, what do you think is the percentage chance Max wins versus percentage chance Lando wins?
I give Max 79% chance of winning.
I'm giving it 65. I like the not round number.
65.
Oh!
Ooh, wow.
Fun.
More likely than not, but there's room in there.
I like it.
I feel like Do you all think Lando is driving at the level that is required?
No. He made so many mistakes this weekend, and we'll talk about it when we get to the McLaren section. It was whack.
I feel like I give him a little bit more grace than that. I feel like McLaren, I love McLaren. They've made it confusing for us, and I imagine it's also very confusing for the drivers. I don't necessarily blame Lando for the lap one situation that happened at this race. I think he probably was not expecting Piastri to make the move he did. I think he probably was thinking he was safe because he got off the line well, and they would just fall into that 1-2, hopefully drive it forward, create some space between Charles.
What was going through Oscar's mind?
Like, I have to say, though, I feel like there were mistakes beyond that. Like, one,
I agree,
later in the race, he lost 2 seconds to Oscar on one lap because of a big mistake. So I don't know.
Or like hitting the bollards on the way to the pit stop.
Yeah. I don't think this race was his best showing, but I do think that he has it in him to drive at that caliber.
All right, well, now that we're on it, let's actually just jump into McLaren since we jumped the gun a little bit. I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit. It was a 1-2. Is it a great way to start Sunday? And given that, it could have been a much better weekend for them. But overall, points-wise, great result, especially given, you know, where they're going to get – how much closer they are to Red Bull now. It was really sad to see how gutted both drivers were after the race, especially Oscar in his post-race interview, just being so sad about, you know, missing out on the win. In my opinion, I think Oscar had the near-perfect race, and it feels like Lando was just, like, flat out trying to keep up, and he had all those little mistakes like we just said. So, yeah, I think they still have a little bit of work to do. And once they can put together a weekend where they're firing on all cylinders, it's going to be really great. I think the biggest challenge, which I want to hear y'all's thoughts on, is papaya rules. So we heard them say papaya rules over the radio, and everyone got a little bit confused because, you know, usually you would hear like driver's rules or like team orders.
Free to race. Like
that. Yeah. So basically we came back and the commentator did some investigating, but papaya rules are the agreed upon rules of engagement to maintain fairness between the two drivers. So the drivers are allowed to race each other within those agreed upon parameters. And they must, I mean, the rules must also have some level of team orders baked into it. But what do you guys think? How is the team going to manage this when Oscar and Lando do kind of seem so matched up?
It's kind of crazy to hear Zach Brown, especially after the race, talking about it in this way. I mean, he likened it already to Senna and Prost, which I feel like is a crazy comparison at this stage of the game. But maybe that's where we're at. And I think it's indicative of how McLaren is thinking about these two drivers. And they want to develop both as future world champions. They need both to win. But this race, it just felt like McLaren blamed Oscar. Oscar blamed the strategy. Lando blamed himself. So no one was happy in this situation. But yeah. I think if you look at it and appreciate the fact that they were still 2-3, probably would have been 1-2 with a better strategy and a one stopper, it's not that bad. I just feel like maybe a little bit of it is getting blown out of proportion, especially because they're knocking at the door of Red Bull now in both championships. But I do feel like They'll get their feet under them. I don't think it's as crazy as people are making it out to be, but there's definitely a lot to be thought about. And I thought the papaya rules thing was confusing. Like, don't tell your drivers to race, and then when one of them does and makes a risky but clean move, which clean seems to be the only thing they care about, and then kind of chastise him for it. I just didn't really understand that as much.
It's also kind of interesting referring to it as papaya rules when, at least from the outside, it seems to be just the default of how most teams operate, including Mercedes and Ferrari, where they just kind of say on the radio, you're free to race unless told otherwise, unless explicitly told hold positions or swap positions or what might be off track told before or after races. But that's the language that's normally used at both. At Red Bull, I guess, is less of an issue because Max and Checo aren't usually fighting. But
Max Verstappen rules.
Yeah. At both Ferrari and Mercedes, I feel like we've heard a lot, free to race, keep it clean. Free to race, focus on the result. Something like that. So it feels strange calling it papaya rules and it almost seems like they're trying to make themselves stand out in terms of handling team orders and the number one driver situation differently, when I don't see what is different. What I do think is that it's way too early to have team orders, given that I do think the driver's championship is still such a long shot and they need to be thinking long term about next year and going forwards, putting both Oscar and Lando in the best position and making sure that maybe Oscar turns out to be the one who can fight for a title better than Lando in a year or two. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And I think it's smart for them to not be doing things like unnecessarily alienating Oscar now with team orders, like swapping for a P2 when it's such a long shot for Lando to win driver's championship, in my opinion. We'll see.
That's fair.
Yeah, the papaya rules thing, just thinking about that, I wonder if some of it is marketing, honestly. Like, they've
like branded it like that
so much in papaya and having that be synonymous with McLaren. They can't call it orange, it has to be papaya. Like, I wonder if marketing plays into it a bit, of that being now plastered all over the internet.
It probably does. I mean, it is spreading like wildfire, and it has a nice ring to it, definitely. Okay, for Ferrari, they brought some major floor upgrades this weekend that really paid off, and they were not expecting them to. So I think it was a bit of a happy surprise for Ferrari as well. Huge weekend for Charles, another important win in the books for this season. Like we said, his first race of the season was Monaco, and now he's got his Tifosi home race. In my mind, this was kind of a stealthy win for him, which we love to see. Usually it's like all glory or like all devastation, and he kind of just like came out of nowhere, which was really
That's
nice.
That's so true.
And he might have given himself a new title as the Tire Whisperer. It was a very well-executed one-stopper. And, yeah, I know Sainz didn't manage to snag the podium, but it was his 30th birthday. We'll have to give him a shout-out. And then when someone said – like, it was, like, pre-race interviews or something, and they mentioned that this was going to be his last Italian race as a Ferrari driver, like, his face just fell. He was like, what? Aww. So I don't know if he'd, like, fully process that. And so
– what a sad thing to say to him on his birthday weekend.
So mean. yeah, especially because it wasn't really his choice, right? And so I think overall the team, this was a really big morale boost. They really needed this. Who knows if they're gonna be able to keep this up, because obviously it's Ferrari. Like, they could literally be last next weekend. But do you guys, after me saying that, do you think that they could actually get P2 and like maybe Red Bull could slip into P3 and they'll be fighting Red Bull?
I think their level of inconsistency, I mean, Charles put it best when he said this season has been a heart attack. And I think you're so right about the high highs and the low lows. They just don't seem to have the consistency there, whether that's the pace of the car or the strategy on certain weekends. It feels tough for them to beat Red Bull in constructors over the next 8 races. I think if I had to guess, I think it'll be a McLaren P1, Red Bull P2, Ferrari P3, but close.
Definitely Mercedes P4.
Yes. Mercedes, I don't think, can make up that ground in 8 races, but you never know.
I think I agree with that ranking, Tiggy. McLaren P1, Red Bull P2, Ferrari P3. It's a bummer for Sainz, and he has done such a good job being a team player. I feel like he really steps up when the situation calls for it. Something like this, when he has to defend, it's kind of Charles's glory moment. And he's, I feel like, done a really good job with the Tifosi and the Ferrari fans and the whole culture. And it's definitely was a sad reminder that he'll be leaving.
So sad. Well, speaking of someone who will be joining the Tifosi next year, let's move on to Mercedes. So
smooth.
So smooth. Smooth operating, as one might say. So the weekend started off pretty tough for the team with the Kimi Antonelli crash situation in George's car during FP1. Like we said, the cameras panned to George when this happened, and he just looked stressed. So despite this, the team did announce his signing on Saturday. Like we said, Toto said he was ready to sign Kimi 5 minutes after he knew Lewis was leaving. How much do we believe that?
I'm curious. Just look skeptical.
I don't believe it for a second. I think it's a cool, it's a cool thing to say, and people are talking about it, hence the conversation that we're having now. And like, did he probably have his sights on Kimi for a long time? For sure. He's a team principal. He thinks forward-looking in terms of strategy. Was it 5 minutes that he was like – you know, WhatsApping a contract to Kimi Antonelli? No way. But you know.
Also, there was all that reporting this summer that Max and potentially either Max and or Max's team met with Toto. So I feel like
Carlos had a one-year deal on the table.
Yeah. I feel like Toto was exploring his options for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've probably had the Kimmy thing sitting on ice for a while, but 5 minutes after Lewis.
He probably was in the realm of possibility and in the conversation 5 minutes after, but whether or not Toto was, you know, set on him from that time, I also think was a little far-fetched.
Also, it was really nice seeing Lewis be so supportive. It was really, really sweet seeing him come out so strongly too, saying Kimmy was his choice of who he would choose as his replacement.
Though I did not like his comment of maybe the team will get better with Kimmy, where he was kind of putting himself down about his quality performances and that, you know, maybe the team will do better with Kimmy. I just feel like that's kind of unnecessary, but I don't know. The race. We did have Lewis finish P5 after a P6 start, which is good, but Lewis was upset, like we said, about his quality performance, just is kind of a weakness of his at the moment and definitely something he wants to work on. George, on the other hand, lost out on podium, going from a P3 start to a P7 finish after suffering damage in the opening stint. So definitely not the race that he wanted. But in all things considered with the damage, I think that's a pretty decent result.
For Aston Martin, the team had really low expectations for the weekend. It's hard to just see how much kind of a non-factor they've been this season, given how positive their trajectory was last season. Even with a P11 finish, Alonso said that was much better than he expected. They had a lot of tire deg this weekend. Overall, it felt like they were kind of trying to cut their losses. Stroll actually finished last in P19, which was tough. So hopefully Aston can have a couple strong performances to finish off this season. And also, when are they announcing Adrian Newey? Where is Adrian going?
That's like their only silver lining that's going to happen in like the next 12 months.
But speaking of Stroll and speaking of catching strays, I think Oscar had a comment that Stroll was driving like it was his first go-kart race, which is a rare zinger.
Oscar said that?
Oscar.
Yeah. I don't love that necessarily, but good for Oscar to, you know.
Dang.
Got to say, I feel like it must be if since Oscar so rarely says a zinger, I feel like this one has a lot of importance.
It does. Pay attention. Take notes.
For V-Carb, tough weekend for them. Like I said earlier, Yuki has had a very tough Monza track record. So here it is. His last five races have been did not start, P14, did not start, and then this year DNF. So big bummer. Maybe one day Monza will love him back. But at the moment, it's unrequited, it seems.
He's also an Italian resident. So this is even sadder.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And then Danny finished P13 after his penalties. He got that 5 second time penalty at the beginning, and then he failed to serve that 5 second time penalty correctly in the pit. So they gave him an extra 10 seconds, which was a big bummer.
For Alpine, we had P14 for Gasly, P15 for Ocon. No points for them here. The big news, though, is that their engine manufacturing workers were set to strike on Friday at Monza to express their discontent at the team's plan to stop production of Renault engines by the 2026 season, rumored to be going towards a Mercedes deal and a Mercedes customer team. The news was a huge shock, described as a disaster by representatives of the Alpine Racing France Works Council. So this is crazy. I don't think we've seen the last of this yet, but people are very unhappy with the idea that they might not be having Renault produce their engines, which is another French company. So
it's French. It has a huge legacy. They have, I think, over 300 employees. Like, this would be a really big deal to just shut that down completely.
Yeah.
For Stake, not a ton to say here. P16 for Bottas and P17 for Joe. Our main outstanding question here is kind of who is going to get that second Stake seat alongside Hülkenberg. There are kind of rumors that it's looking like Bottas is going to get re-signed. I feel like that would be an awesome pairing. I would really like to see that. What do you all think?
I would love that. I'm surprised that this hasn't been talked about more with Bottas. I think everybody's been looking around at other teams, probably because he hasn't been doing well at Stake and he's not in a fast car. But I do think it makes sense, especially with the Sauber situation for 2026 and Audi. I don't know. I would be happy to see Bottas stay. And I agree that him and Hülkenberg would be a dynamic
It'd be a fun
pairing.
It'd be a fun team.
And Mattia Binotto was on the scene in the same outfit this weekend. That was wild.
Green. That was a weird situation.
I was sitting next to Sarah on the train and she like flashes that photo and it was like such a jump scare. I was like, who? What?
Like, where's the red? He's such a Ferrari man.
I mean, green kind of looked good on him, so we'll see about that. To wrap up the teams for Haas, despite getting only 1 point in the championship and finishing P10, K-Mag actually got 2 new penalty points on his super license for his collision with Gasly on lap 19. So he'll be missing the next race in Baku, and it could mean a great sort of early Haas debut for Ollie Bearman. So we'll see what happens there. And then for Hülkenberg, he dropped to P17 for his finish after his time penalty with his collision with Yuki at the beginning of the race.
For Williams, the big news for the team this weekend was the debut of Logan's replacement, Argentinian Franco Colapinto. It's the first time in 23 years Argentina is on the F1 grid, so big news for them. He's an Argentinian F2 driver who made his FP1 debut with Williams at Silverstone this year. P18 to P12 is huge for his first race, and he pulled off a one-stopper, like we said, with a 37-lap stint, just one less than what Charles managed to do. We haven't talked yet in detail about the Logan dropping, so I feel like we have to talk about that a little bit here.
Has Logan said anything yet as of the time that we're recording this on Monday evening?
I don't believe so. He posted something on his app. It was kind of a generic statement and then took it down. But I don't think that there's been anything since. But what do you all think about this? I remember when we were debating this in the preview, which I did leave in the preview because I was like, this is an actual interesting conversation, even though we know the outcome. But we were both on the side of Williams wouldn't do that. If they would, they would have already done it. So I feel like it is kind of a shock that they did it just one race after summer break instead of just cutting him loose beforehand.
It's so confusing also because Franco is not going to be on the team next year.
Yeah.
So it seems kind of expensive. The only thing that might have happened was that it came from Logan. And Logan was kind of like, I need to cut the strings now to pursue my options for next year because I know it's not going to happen for me next year. And like, who knows, maybe he's like spinning deals on IndyCar and we don't know yet, but maybe he needed
a little bit of time. Would being in an F1 car detract from him getting an IndyCar seat next year? If anything, I think that's only additive. I know the cars are different, but another factor here is apparently Franco Colapinto is paying almost $5 million for that seat. So that's —
what do you mean? Like, he has like sponsors and stuff that he's bringing in, or he's literally shelling out $5 million?
I believe we'd have to double check this, but I believe it's like a paid seat situation.
Wow. I thought it was more that like certain big Argentinian companies were like, if there's an Argentinian in the seat, we will sponsor X amount. I don't think drivers are allowed to like directly pay.
Whether or not he's paying directly or someone is paying $5 million for that
seat.
That's
crazy. Well, then there you have it, because I don't think there's going to be American sponsors ponying up all this money when F1 is still not necessarily huge here. Wow. Well, I'm excited. I mean, you know what? Like, I'm so sad for Logan, and I think he could have done so much more in F1, and it was sad, especially just like from an American front of not having had our first American driver in a while really shine. But you know me, I love new meat, and I mean, he did really well this weekend, so I think Franco will have a good last.
Did you say new meat?
New meat on the block. That's not what they say when there's like a new kid at school.
Fresh meat?
Cafeteria. Fresh meat. Help.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. This was such a wild weekend in Monza. It is an off week next week, and then we will be back for a doubleheader with Baku and Singapore, both of which are really thrilling street circuits that have drivers like Checo who could potentially make a reemergence with their strength there. So we're very excited and can't wait.
Why didn't I save my Checo hot take for Baku? Maybe I'll just have to repeat that.
Okay, bye.